I'd like to start off by telling you two secrets. The first of these is a secret no man should tell anybody, and I'll tell you. Secret on how to get my goat. Now, I've got two daughters, Sherelle and Joanna. I like to think I've got six daughters. The dear holy sisters that have passed through our lives are like daughters to us also. And none of them are perfect. They've each got their own little foibles. But when you come to me sometime, many of you have, if you ever come to me, and rip into them, and unjustly criticize them, that gets my goat. That's one way you can get my goat. Because I know them, and I know they're not perfect, but I know their hearts. I know they mean well. And because of that, I don't really appreciate real harsh criticism of them. The second secret is how to get God's goat. He's got children too. And when we unjustly rip into his children, we get his goat. He gets upset. He's asked us not to do it. That's part of the subject of brotherly kindness. A lot can be said about translation of words. A lot can be said about the inadequacy of the King James Bible. But when it comes to this text, I love the King James Bible. I think it does a beautiful job. Probably I might be more personally inclined to translate it brotherly love. But I think it does a better job by translating it brotherly kindness. The word is Philadelphia. And the philo part is what we want to talk about. Filial. It's talking about the filial love. This is one text that tells us, well, agape love may have its own supremacies over filial. Never acquire agape by losing filial. The two have to be hand in hand. They're different aspects. Filial is the kindness side of love. Filial is the warmth of love. Filial is the embrace. Filial is the hand under the elbow to pick one up. Filial is the pat on the back. This is the kind of love that he's talking about here, that we're to have for our brethren. It's a real, warm, genuine love. The Phillips translation in Romans 12 puts it this way, let us not have a fake love, but a real, genuine, warm affection one for another. That's what he's talking about. A warm affection that means, maybe the word love is poor, maybe it should be translated like. Well, somebody was say once to their mate, says, oh, I love them, I just don't like them. We have to do more than love our brethren, we have to like our brethren. We have to learn to like them. Any of you who are married can testify that it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work to make a marriage go. To make it a wholesome union. It takes a lot of work to get to like, despite the frailties. The same thing is true when we come to this subject of brotherly love. It does take a lot of effort. There are times when brotherly love is very easy. There are times when we see one of our brethren or one of our sisters do something for us or for the Lord or for someone else or just behave themselves in such a Christian way, we just love it. That's good. But that isn't all the time. There are other times when the practice of brotherly love is very difficult. And it requires certain steps on our part. First, it requires constant contact. If you like somebody, If you love somebody, you want to be with that person. You want to physically see them. Oh, there may come those things that divide you and separate you, and you may have, as a result, a little harder time pushing yourself to see them. But if you have brotherly love, you will want to see them. You will want to make whatever sacrifice is required on your part to go over to them and to show in some manner, I have a warm affection for you. I desire a closer relationship. The longer two people stay away, the more difficult it is for them to get back together. Remember how it was with Esther? When she needed to go to the king on a desperate matter? But it's been 30 days since I've seen him. And by now she didn't know how to approach him anymore. Let's not let those 30-day periods go by. Let's take every opportunity we have. We enjoy, I think all of us, sometimes going across the country to be with our brethren. Sometimes we don't enjoy going across the city to be with others of our brethren. It's the idea of having a desire to be together. But there are principles that love must operate by. There are principles that must guide it, and these principles are principles of holiness, truth, the priority of the relationship of God, the priority of the relationship of truth. You always say it is important that we say, I will serve the Lord, the truth, and the brethren, and in that order. And that's very true. But how do we establish this priority? How do we work within it? When someone comes short of what we feel are the standards that we would set, how does brotherly love operate? If someone's beliefs are different, if someone's lifestyle is different, if someone has actually gone out and sinned, done that which is definitely wrong, how then does brotherly kindness operate? How did it operate with our Lord? It was the Pharisees who said, you are too liberal in going to the sinner. It was our Lord who said, you are too hypocritical for forbidding me to go to the sinner. Brotherly love reached out. You remember the time, you'll say, oh, that's a spurious passage. The time in John where the adulteress is brought before him, and he said, let him without sin cast the first stone. Well, since it's spurious, we can't use that passage. But you can find it in the Old Testament, and there it's not spurious. You can find it in 2 Chronicles, the 28th chapter, when the northern tribe of Israel had been sent down to punish the southern tribe. And they came back with a host of captives in tow. 2 Chronicles 28:10. And a little minor prophet named Oded says, are there not among you, even among you, those who have sinned against the Lord? Saying the same thing. He is saying, there but for the grace of God go I. It is this development of compassion to the sinner that is the essence of the love of Christ to us. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Sometimes while our brethren are yet sinners is the time they need compassion the most. Compassion does not argue against the heights of a standard. Compassion does not argue for the acceptance of the sin. Compassion argues for the recognition of the weakness of the sinner. And as a result, brotherly kindness reaches over these boundaries and seeks to draw back. But we say we must not endanger our own safety. Brethren, that's what it's all about, is endangering our own safety. The Lord endangered his own safety. He endangered his reputation. He was called a glutton and a winebibber. He was called a friend of harlots. He was called a lot of untrue things. He was willing to be called that because he recognized the heart of the person that he was talking to. I think when we were probably in first or second grade, we probably all had variations of a little story that was told us about the argument between the sun and the wind. They saw a man walking down the street and said, "Now, let's see which is most powerful. Who can get him to take off his coat?" And the wind said, "I'm most powerful," and he blew at him with all his force. And the man just put the coat on tighter and tighter and wouldn't take it off. And the wind finally gave up, and the sun said, "I'll just shine on him." And the sun smiled down upon him, and pretty soon the coat came off. We put that adage another way, don't we? That you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. That so often we can best correct, we can best exhibit the highness of the standard by showing our respect and confidence that our brother or our sister really wants to live up to it. And so we paint before them the image that in our mind we see them trying, rather than painting before them the image that really they're falling down over the place. They know that. They don't have the confidence to get up again. So we have to show them in brotherly kindness that, "No, I'm not looking at you down there. I'm looking at you where I can really see you want to walk." And when we do that, there's no hypocrisy. Because that's how the Lord deals with us. If there be first a willing mind, it is accorded to a man by what he has, and not by what he has not. And so we have to recognize in our brethren, there are times they have a willing mind, but they cannot even express to us that willingness. Because they have felt they have fallen so far that they've got to put up now a shield of protection and say, "No, what I'm doing is perfectly fine." We have to first assume that that shield is nothing more than a shield that is required by a guilt-ridden soul, and is not truly the intent of their heart. And let the sun shine on. And pretty soon, just like the man takes off his coat, they'll take off that shield. And in response to respect, they will turn and walk in a way that would demand and command respect. That's brotherly love. Brotherly love is the development of compassion over and beyond where it is deserved. It is the looking at the prospective reality and not at the dismal failures that each of us are in our own way. The acquisition of brotherly love is the application of the golden rule in action. I found in the last 10 years of my own life and business and activities amongst the brethren, there has become no more important scripture to me than the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. To look at a situation and say, "Now, if the situation were reversed, if I were the one on the other side, how would I want me to deal with me?" Brethren, I want kindness. I want sympathy. I want help. And then I got to give it. And that's brotherly kindness. To recognize that we are not always on the giving side of the fence, but many times ourselves must be on the receiving side. And to recognize that need that we have for brotherly kindness. It's a simple thing. It's a warmth relationship. It's that relationship when you don't approve of what I do, you're still able to put your arm around me and wait for that moment when I'm ready to receive the criticism, and then in kindness give it to me. In speaking of brotherly kindness, Paul says, "Consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works. And I think we all recognize that the heart of that text is in those first two words. Consider one another. Think about one another. Think about how I can provoke. I may not be able to provoke Brother Wayne in the same way that I could provoke Brother Greg unto love. They're different people. They've got different environments. They've had different exposures to life. Tim has had a different exposure. Gene's had a different one. So has Walter. Each of you have had your own exposures. And before I can exercise the corrective power of love, I must consider how to exercise it. Perhaps this is nowhere more important than to those of us who are elders. As an elder, you face many different brethren. You have many different opportunities, collectively from the platform, privately in fellowship, counseling. But each situation is different. It probably becomes more important to the elder that he spend more time considering how to present the talk than in considering what the talk is going to contain. How to present it in a way that will be receivable. The wise man in Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, says that he thought in order and brought forth many proverbs. He brought forth acceptable words. That's an important concept in considering one another. If I were to use to one of you a certain word, you could get all upset. Even though the concept that I'm expressing by that word, you're not that upset about. But the word that I choose to use is not the word that conveys to your mind the concept that I'm trying to convey. And so we need to determine how I can talk to you. Paul did this. You know, he said, I was a Jew to the Jew, and I was a Pharisee to the Pharisees, and he was a Roman to the Romans. He says in another case, by guile I caught you. Not deceptive guile. By consideration of how he can most influentially convey his thoughts and his mind to you. Oh, but you say, then I can't be straightforward. Then I can't be an honest person, tell it like it is. And that's right. Then we can't be straightforward. Then we have to be, instead of straightforward, considerate. Considerate of the sensibilities and of the sensitivities of others to what we're doing, to what we're saying. If we don't have that considerateness of sensitivities and sensibilities, then we're not going to provoke to love and good works. Oh, we'll provoke, but we'll stop there. We need to provoke unto. This isn't easy. This requires faith. The past speakers have mentioned, and it's a beautiful lesson, that our theme text is built upon a series of additions. You start with faith, and then you add. And that's a beautiful thought, because as you work up that ladder, you notice how each thing in the ladder becomes a prerequisite for the thing on top of it. But I don't really think that that's what Peter had in mind. I totally agree with that lesson. The lesson is beautiful. But the word add is a word that is only used about four times. This particular word. Excuse my Greek. I'm going to pronounce it epikorego. Now that latter part of it, korego, is a word that merely means a choir master. A person is directing a choir. And the epa is just an intensive upon it. So there's two thoughts really in the word itself. And the word to, by the way, add to your faith, is the Greek word en, add in your faith. Not something add on top of it, but something inside of it. From one standpoint, be a choir master. Get the harmony between these things. Draw it out. Be the choir master that has virtue in harmony with godliness, in harmony with your brotherly love, in harmony with this. These are the alto, the tenor, the soprano, the bass parts, and bring them all out in their individual area. have a symphony of the elements that are here. But even that isn't really the thought of this epichoragon. Because in ancient times, these choir masters became the ones who provided the choirs. And they provided for the altos and the tenors and the whatever the voices were. And so from this aspect, instead of adding to, it's from your faith, take these elements out of the faith and use these as individual elements. Consider them as a whole, but consider them individually. And it takes great faith to exercise brotherly kindness. Because when one does not seem to deserve brotherly kindness, it takes faith to believe that they will do it. You know, in Luke, the 15th and 16th chapter, Jesus gives a series of parables to the scribes and the Pharisees who were criticizing him for his mingling with the sinners. And then when it's over, those series of parables, in the 17th chapter, he turns to his disciples and he says, so ought you to forgive. If your brother offend you seven times, forgive him seven times. And they caught this lesson because they tied it in. They said, Lord, increase our faith. I haven't got that much faith. You know, if somebody slaps me in the cheek, I can assume it was an accident. They didn't mean to. They were upset. But when they do it a second time and say they're sorry, I say, yeah, okay, but it still hurts. By the time they've done it seven times, I begin to doubt the sincerity of their apology. You know, I got to accept it again. Lord, increase my faith. Before I haul off and slug him seven times. That's the point of how faith can give us brotherly kindness and love. Love, of course, is agape. Here again, I'm going to try to defend briefly the King James translation. You know, we have quoted this text so often this way, we don't even realize that King James doesn't quote it this way. This isn't King James. King James at the end says, and add to brotherly kindness, charity. Same word used in 1 Corinthians 13. I happen to be one who likes the word charity. Because what I like about charity is it illustrates an aspect of agape that the word love just doesn't convey to our minds. When you are charitable, when you give to a charity, what do you get back from it? Nothing. You're giving and that's it. And that is the thought of agape. That's why charity got stuck to that word. Because it was the giving with the no hope of return. It was the total unselfish giving. The other reason I like charity is connected with the word charitable. And charitable is a word we don't only connect with monetary things. We connect with our attitudes toward others. When somebody does something wrong, you're charitable to them. You assume the best possible position for him doing it instead of the worst. Perhaps this was there. And there are times in doing this you realize you're extending far beyond the probabilities. But you don't need to worry about that because that's the Lord's job. He knows which probabilities are true and which aren't. And so he says, add to your brotherly kindness this charitableness, this willing to give where you get no return, this willingness to befriend a person who, while he may appreciate you befriending, it all of a sudden puts you at enmity with all of your friends and doesn't bring you the friendship of his friends. It puts you into a middle position where you become the outsider. It's okay. Be charitable. You're getting nothing in return. Well, that's not totally true. You're getting one thing in return. The Lord's approval. And if we can expect that in return for our charitableness, that should be sufficient reward for each of us. That's why we call it a principled love. It loves because in principle it is right to love. He has set that down as his precept. And because in principle it is right, we do it. Paul spoke in Hebrews the 10th chapter
about at his time. Those remembering the former days when they were surrounded by such a great flight of affliction, partly while you were thus used, and partly while you were companions of those who were so used. So is there someone in your area? Is there someone at a convention that maybe the others don't think too much about? Maybe for this reason or that they're a little looked down upon? Try being their companion. Try you being their friend. And I think in the great majority of cases you will find that where all of their critics haven't budged them an inch, your friendship just might. It may change the pattern of their life. We can draw this out of the wealth of our faith if we recognize they are God's children and we don't want to get his goat. We don't want to upset him any more than we would be upset if you were to attack one of my six daughters. If you were to say those things that I realize, well, yeah, there's a measure of truth to it, but you don't know the real person. That's what we need to exercise in this development of brotherly love.